Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could be with us today. Minnesotans have seen above-average snowfall for the month, but above-average temperatures have also left parts of the state covered in ice from freezing rain and a January thaw. Now temperatures are going back down, freezing recent rainwater, and more snow is on the way. You know the drill. Time to be mindful on your drive to work or while you walk outside, because the risk of slipping and falling is very possible and it might leave you with a winter injury. It's not just having an accident outside that will have you sliding your way into a bruise or a fracture. Winter sports, as fun as they are, can also lead to a bad enough injury that could freeze your fun. So today I want to talk about the different ways you can hurt yourself this time of the year and what you can do to keep yourself from injuring your body when you go outside. We'll also talk about recovering, why you should take your time getting up from a fall, and why you might not want to just walk off that pain. And I want to hear from you, your stories. What winter injuries have you had? And what are your tips for preventing falls and other winter accidents? Call us. The phone numbers are 651-227-6000. Again, you can call 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Let's bring in our guest. We have with us Dr. Joel Boyd, an orthopedic surgeon with Tria Orthopedics. He's also head team physician for the Minnesota Wild and the team physician for the Minnesota Golden Gophers football team. He was the first Black team physician in NHL history when the Minnesota Wild started playing back in 2000. Dr. Boyd is also an adjunct assistant professor at the University of Minnesota and the former head team physician for the Minnesota Vikings, as well as a former Olympic team physician. So let's just put it like this. He's seen a lot of injuries. Good morning to you, Dr. Boyd.
Good morning, Angela.
So glad you could make time for us. We also have here in the studio Matt Neuger. Now, Matt is a visiting assistant professor of kinesiology at St. Olaf College in Northfield, and he is a practicing physical therapist at Partniklik and Tria Physical Therapy. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Angela. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to talk about the ways we can get hurt out in winter weather, including falling, because I am recovering from a bad fall, as you have probably heard me talk about, after tripping on a sidewalk a few months ago and fracturing my left arm in two places. It's the most pain I've ever experienced, and it's been a very slow recovery process. So now that there is snow and ice on the ground and on the sidewalks, I'm hearing about and even witnessing other people fall. And Matt, this is no small thing. You're a physical therapist. What can you tell me about the patients you're helping right now to recover from injuries, particularly in the wintertime? How are people getting hurt?
Yeah, we're seeing a variety of injuries. Like you said, it's really easy this time of year to slip and fall. So we're seeing plenty of those, but the ice goes beyond that in terms of you know, car accidents, and so concussions and head injuries with those as well. So from the broken bones that people experience and the bumps and bruises, but also we've had lots of heavy wet snow lately, and so back pain with shoveling is really common, and some muscle strains that way. And then, not that they're planned, but they're more understood as far as the risk with sporting injuries, with skating, skiing, things like that. We see knee injuries, muscle strains, concussions with those activities as well.
And there are also people who get hurt trying to help other people, maybe pushing out a car, a truck stuck in the snow.
Absolutely. So a lot of, you know, good neighbors end up with issues as well that way, and muscle strains and often back pain and things like that related to those activities as well.
Dr. Boyd, you've lived in Minnesota a long time. What do you see each winter when it comes to injuries related to the snow and ice that we have to move around in?
Right. Well, yeah. Thanks for having me. But with these types of injuries, the issue is that this time of year, this is the busiest time of year for orthopedics, and it's because it's on several fronts. Not only is it the weather outside, which, as you mentioned, there's sports being played on a number of teams and levels, and so we see a lot of patients. The problem with especially slips and falls is that a lot of it has to do with, like you said, the cycle of melting snow and freezing rain and the temperature going up and down. And, you know, being aware of, you know, what the temperature is doing is important, because when you came in the morning, might not be the same conditions you go home in at night. Also, footwear becomes important for patients who might be out walking. It's good to take that extra pair of shoes, the ones that are really good on ice, and then the ones you really want to wear at work is a good thing to do as well. And that's for both men and women. Just being mindful of kind of how you walk also is important, and walking more flat-footed, especially on ice, is helpful. So, but as was mentioned, yeah, we see injuries all over, and there's a million people a year, certainly from slips and falls, and that include also head injuries. So it can be catastrophic type injuries.
And Dr. Boyd, I know you work with professional athletes and with college athletes, but we have high school and younger kids playing winter sports. Mm-hmm. What about some of those sports related injuries that you see and treat?
Yeah, in sports, it's a little bit different. I mean, when the kids are playing, especially at the younger levels, it's sort of one of these mass versus speed kinds of things. They're not really super heavy, but they're not really traveling super fast. So, they tolerate falls. We've always known that from our own children. Mm-hmm. That, when they fall, they're closer. We always say they're closer to the ground. Well, yeah, but it's also that they don't generate a lot of speed, and they don't have a lot of mass that's coming to the ground, whereas adults have much more mass and much more speed headed to the ground, and therefore causing more severe injuries. So so with the younger kids, you do see injuries, and they can get bumps and bruises and those kinds of things. It's just the sheer volume of sports and the sheer amount of time spent in sports. We see that as probably a bigger issue for our younger kids. As you move into college, high school, college, of course, they get bigger. The mass is there. The speed is there. And so we start to see bigger injuries. And it just, from things like skiing and downhill skiing. I mean, again, now you've, really increased your speed and mass. So these are all factors in creating some of these injuries. And even just walking, when your feet slip out from under you, it is still a mass versus speed issue, because you're headed to the ground with your full weight.
Mm. And you mentioned, youth. I remember Dr. Boyd falling and just bouncing back up. That did not happen at 54. I fell down and I was down. So what do we need to know, just be aware of with aging, that, that the recovery process and the injury, it can be more serious and can take longer. Is that correct, Dr. Boyd?
Yes. Certainly, yeah, we don't bounce back like we used to. And that is true. As we get older, it does... the whole process of recovery, regeneration, bones heal, but they don't heal as fast, as you get older as they did when you were younger. So it tends to take longer. And so your recovery can be fairly long and very much involved with rehab. Rehab becomes super important as we get older. And not only just rehab for the injury, but rehab for our balance, rehab for our strength, because you need those things to have you continue to be protected.
Matt, what can you tell us about aging and, just the understanding that it could take a while to get back to where you were, or you may not get back to where you were?
Yeah, it's harder to recover, obviously, as we get older. I have a four-year-old at home, and she falls down all the time and bounces up giggling, right? If I fall down, I'm not giggling when I get back up, right? In addition to healing a little bit slower as we get older and feeling those bumps and bruises and things like that a little bit longer, we oftentimes also experience a little bit more fear of that activity going forward. We don't want that to happen again.
That happened to me. I had a fear of sidewalks for a couple of weeks.
And that's a daily part of your life, right? So mm-hmm. So it really impacts those daily activities and that daily function. And so that's part of what we try to address in therapy, is just kind of improving your comfort with those activities. From obviously, we want to improve your balance and get you back to your activities, but maybe experiencing some of those things that were fearful before. So not only addressing the tissue that was injured, but addressing the underlying things that maybe caused the injury, and then going a step further and making you comfortable with those activities again.
When I broke my arm, the most common advice I got from people was this: go to physical therapy, listen to your physical therapist, and do the work. And I found that to be true. And so what is it about physical therapy and working with a trained professional to help you through your specific injury that's really so valuable that can make things better?
First of all, that's harder than it seems to follow that advice sometimes.
It is, because it's time. It's time consuming.
And so sometimes the advice that we give isn't necessarily rocket science. Sometimes it seems rather straightforward even at times, but carving out time to practice those things and being consistent with them really leads to that comfort with those activities going forward and preparing those tissues to get back to that activity again. And so that consistency is really important.
And I was told regularly that, like, the more you do early on, shortly after the injury, the more impact you're going to have. And that is true.
Absolutely. So especially early in that healing stage, that tissue is a little bit more pliable to begin with. You're going to make more gains to begin with. From a tissue level, but also, again, in terms of the psychological aspect there as well, improving that comfort and getting comfortable with those activities again.
All right. I want to talk more about falling, how to fall, how to get back up, what to do and what not to do. But first, I want to take some phone calls from our listeners. If you're just joining us, we're talking about winter injuries, common ways people get hurt this time of the year, including falling and maybe shoveling or trying to help somebody else out. And I want to hear from you. What injuries have you had? How did you recover? What advice do you have? Tips for preventing falls and other winter accidents? You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, that is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. I'm talking with an orthopedic surgeon and a physical therapist. Let's take a phone call from Bloomington, where Margaret is on the phone. Good morning, Margaret. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Hi. For taking my call. Can
sure.
you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
Okay. Well, 10 years ago, I fell on the ice and when I was walking to work. And what shocked me about it, I mean, I did end up breaking my wrist or my lower arm, but what really shocked me is how it set me back mentally for months, maybe even years. I quit, and physically as well, I quit walking to work because it was winter and it spooked me. And then even when it was nice weather, I quit walking to work because I'd lost some of my strength that I just, and endurance for walking to work. And that really set me, it really shocked me how physically and mentally I was set back. I think I'm past it now, although I am a little leery when I get out on icy streets, but
understandable. And so you want people to know that it's no small thing.
It is not a small thing. And I did not realize till today that you had a fall, and
we've bonded, Margaret. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Excellent phone call. Thank you, Margaret, for sharing that story. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Dr. Boyd, do you hear stories like this with some regularity?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that we think about not only just with slip and falls, but with all injuries. There's a psychological component that occurs following an injury of avoidance. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if it happens in the summer or in the winter or in sports or not in sports. I mean, we see athletes constantly battle it's the psychological aspect of getting back to where they were that's difficult. And even though we talk about daily activities, you know, we always treat like talk about people as being athletes no matter what they do. And so, you know, walking to work every day is that athletic endeavor. Mm-hmm. And so getting back to doing that is still a psychological hurdle. And it's hindered by, you know, her fear of falling. And so those are things that, we've started focusing more on. And I think in physical therapy, they've worked on it even longer than we have as physicians, because we just worry about, like, is it healed more or less? Or is it capable of supporting weight? Is it capable, the person capable of locomotion? But the psychological piece is super important, and we rely on the help with physical therapists and trainers with teams to help us and help the patients push past some of that mental hurdle.
And Matt, it is important to remain active. I mean, she's doing a good thing walking to work, and it is surprising to her, just like, you know, just the domino effect once you have an injury like this.
Absolutely. That negative cycle is just trouble, right? And so you know, the fear of falling and the fall itself and the injury lead to a more sedentary lifestyle, and that increases the fear of falling in the future. And so that's really where we come in, as far as really trying to get people comfortable with those activities, and not only heal, you know, working on the tissue itself, but then going forward to removing the fear to get back to that active lifestyle and ultimately prevent falls in the future.
What about, and this may be not be your area of expertise, but advice I also got was about diet and nutrition and the role it can play in helping the body heal.
Yeah, that's certainly not my exact forte, but absolutely proper nutrients and proper rest too in terms of workouts are really important in that recovery aspect as well.
Dr. Boyd, what do you want people to know about what to eat and, you know, bone density? That's been my new hot topic.
Yeah, that's a whole, I mean, we need another hour.
I know, but it's important, right?
Regarding bone density, right?
I know.
Yeah, because we all lose bone density as we get older. Some start with a little more bone density than others. Clearly, it is an epidemic, actually, especially among older white females, osteopenia and osteoporosis, and so having a decreased bone density and, you know, using, you know, having adequate levels of vitamin D and calcium are super important. And sometimes, you know, the first inkling they have of these things is when they slip and fall and they have a significant fracture. So, you know, especially if it's like a hip fracture, which then can become, again, become a mortality issue. So I think that diet is extremely important, and also checking with your primary care physician to just make sure that your bone health is adequate, especially as we get older and go above, 45, 50 years of age.
Let's take more phone calls as we talk about winter injuries and recovering from them. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. In Minneapolis, Michelle is on the phone. Good morning, Michelle. What do you want to share with us?
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
I fell about 4 years ago. I was 51. I fell ice skating and broke my upper arm. It was the first break I'd ever experienced. And I thought, okay, a couple of weeks in a sling, I'll be back to normal. I had no idea that it would be 2 years of physical therapy before I would feel better. So I think and going into physical therapy, they had told me probably you really would only gain, improvement for about the first year. But I just kept at it. And that would be my advice to people is do your physical therapy, keep at it. It's your body. You want to have that recovery. Mm-hmm. You want to have that mobility and strength back, and it can take time, but I think there can be, rewards for doing that work. The other thing is anybody who's done physical therapy knows there's these assessments. I ask a lot of questions to see your improvement over time. And I was disappointed in the assessment tool and that it felt, like it had been designed by men, in that it asked me if I could put my hand in my back pocket. And we know, I think most of us, that's more about people who put wallets in their back pocket. It did not ask me if I could put my arm behind my back, which is what women or people who wear a bra, attach right. a swimsuit, people who put a dress on with, there's a lot of fasteners in the back, jewelry. And that was not one of the assessment tools. And that's a very important skill, especially for any older women who live alone, to be able to put our arms behind our back. And so I gave that feedback to my clinic, but I'm just giving it to everyone listening now that we need to really look at what skills women need to have with moving our arms.
And the recovery process. And Michelle, did you require surgery for your broken arm?
No, in fact, mm-hmm. I only just wore a sling, which is probably what led me to believe, oh, it's, you know, not that mm-hmm. big of a thing. In fact, the sling, they said, was more so that other people would know I was injured and wouldn't bump into me.
Mm-hmm.
The good news, 2 years later, you know, it's been 4 years now, but took about 2 years. I have no pain, full mobility, and I have gone back out and ice skated. And it was not easy, but it was
That's
kind of a test
news.
To say, you got to do it. You got to get back on the ice.
That's good news. Thank you, Michelle. Dr. Boyd, so that's a good question. I think a question I always have is like, why is it that some people, when they have a fracture, some people require surgery and some people don't? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, right. So the fractures range from being just a kind of like a little crack in the bone all the way up to, you know, there's a crack all the way across the bone, but it's still relatively in the right place. To then the bone two ends moving away from each other, and then they can be completely moved away from each other, 100% displaced, we call it. And so it can be anywhere along. All of those are called fractures. And so depending on the type of fracture, whether it's many pieces or one piece, or two pieces that are just close together, you know, may be close enough that the better or the more prudent thing is to let it heal on its own. Or if there's multiple pieces, then the more prudent thing might be to help reapproximate those pieces using plates or screws or some devices to help hold those pieces closer together mm-hmm. to get them to unite. And the thing I would say for anyone, and I tell this to my patients all the time, I mean, if you have a fracture, and it's so funny because even though we have all these different fractures, you know, once you get them reapproximated or once they're revived, it still takes anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks truly for the bone to actually, you know, heal or be stable, you know, enough. And that, you know, it can still show signal if you were to, say, MRI it or whatever, for, like, up to a year. So the bone is continuing to remodel. It's a living thing. So it's not just a one event. And typically most fractures, even the ones that are not displaced, don't really heal in a couple of weeks. And I think, you know, we should tell patients that, you know, that's a rarity. Now, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they couldn't feel better in a couple of weeks. Some of them do, but the bone hasn't really healed at that time.
And Dr. Boyd, as you know, I had surgery in D.C., and that's what happened to me, is that it the fractures in my elbow required surgery and a metal plate and a few pins or screws to, as you described, help my bones reunite. I like that. It's a process. And so, it is getting stronger, but it's slow. I want to talk about some advice, Matt, about how to fall, because I thought about this because it happened so fast. I'm like, I don't even remember how I went down, and I wasn't carrying anything. But I know there is some advice on the best way. If you think I'm going down, like what to and not to do if you have a chance to think about it.
Yeah. Oftentimes, like you said, it happens so fast that it just, you're down and right. you didn't even notice. But if you do have a chance to kind of think about it, you know, first thing is what you fall onto. You know, right now we have ice and quite a bit of snow around us. So if we can hit the snow instead of the ice when we go down, you know, the softer surface is going to be much better for us.
So like
try to direct yourself. Right, exactly.
Okay.
And then in terms of the body part that you hit, makes a big difference as well. So oftentimes with wrist, with elbow fractures, we put our arm down and catch ourselves with that arm locked out straight.
Stretch it out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to brace myself.
And that does set us up for some of those fractures in our wrist and elbow and even all the way up to the shoulder. So if we can hit softer parts, if we can land on our backside rather than right on the side of our hip, rather than right on the side of our shoulder, but kind of more the fleshy parts, those are less likely to break.
I do remember after I fell, I was like, oh, but I didn't hit my head, right? So
that's
what
good
about
too.
The head? Yep. Like head injuries, because that's bad.
Absolutely. And so sometimes we can't control that, right? The head kind of snaps back and hits. But again, if we can protect our head and avoid those head injuries, that's one of the blessings in your fall, and that you didn't kind of compound it with a further injury that way. And so that's a good way to we want to avoid those head injuries as well.
What about getting up? Should we? Because when I went down, I was like, I'm staying down. Don't know what. Don't anybody touch me. Don't move me.
And that's great, because that's the opposite of a lot of people's inclination is there's kind of a mix of feelings, right? It's emotional. You're hurt. You're stressed, maybe a little embarrassed. And so the natural inclination for you and for the people around you is like, let's yank you to your feet. And that
no yanking.
Yeah. So that can cause some problems. So, yeah.
And what about, I know that some people get hurt. We mentioned trying to help other people. Mm-hmm. So if you come along someone who's on the ground, what do we need to be mindful of when we're trying to lift somebody up?
Yeah.
Who may be heavy?
Yeah. That's a really good point as well. The first thing is the person on the ground should really be the person kind of driving the situation. And so one, are they safe to move? Are they ready to move? That lets them be an active participant as helping themselves back up. And so if I came across you on the ground and I just try to hoist you back up, that's a lot of work for me. But if you kind of direct me and say, okay, I'm safe to move, I'm ready to move, and now I can help move, now you can help me lift you up. And so that can really reduce the stress on the caregiver by making you an active participant in helping yourself.
And Dr. Board, as a team physician working with athletes, do they get some instructions on how to fall and how to get up or how to help each other if you see an injury?
Well, I'm not sure that I don't get instructions about necessarily how to fall. When you're dealing with, especially professional athletes, I mean, they've been doing this for quite some time, and it's sort of weeded itself out. I mean, these are the best of the best in their respective sport. And so how to fall is usually not exactly, something that they have to be taught. Certainly the training staff and the medical staff, become much more alert. And sometimes how players go down, you already kind of have an idea of what's going on even before you get to them, if you see it happen. And then as was just mentioned, just let the player to some degree drive, what happens next. I mean, you just want to have a conversation. You want to let them do sort of an internal body check to kind of feel like, okay, I can move my feet, I can move my legs, and you may cue them for some of those things. And then when they're ready, they can sit up. And once they sit up, then it's like, okay, they'll say, okay, yeah, I'm ready to get up. Or they'll help them up. So I think that's good advice when coming across anyone. And I would also agree about the head injury. I think that's kind of like first, like you want to protect your head because that, can kill you with a bad head injury. And then beyond that, you're right, as you start to stick extremities out, like your arms and things, most people tighten up kind of when that happens, meaning, they get really stiff, like they're going to stop their body weight from hitting the ground or doing a face plant. And just giving a little bit there sometimes can be helpful because it helps to transfer some of that pressure up the extremity and share it with the rest of the body if you're going to be going out onto your hands or onto your knees, that kind of thing.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about winter injuries and the recovery process and the ways that you can get hurt as we try to move around in the snow and ice here in Minnesota. 651-227-6000 is the number to call. In St. Paul, Paula's on the line. Hi, Paula. What's going on with you?
Hi. This is a great show. So I have fallen in the past, broken a wrist, required surgery and pins, and it was a long recovery. But my concern now is that I have osteoporosis, and so a fall for me could mean a broken hip, which could set me back forever, really.
Right.
And I walk a very active dog every morning. And so what I want to say is I got some crampons, those Yak Tracks is one brand. This isn't that brand, but they go on the bottoms of your boots. Mm-hmm. And these are not just the little spring kind. I mean, they have serious spikes on them, and they have changed it for me entirely. Every morning when I took her out, I was so anxious that I was going to fall. And now I feel, even though I'm still careful, I feel so much more confident. So I really would recommend them to anybody that's going to be out walking on the sidewalk or the streets while they're in this icy condition.
Right. Great advice.
You can get them on Amazon for not that much. And again, get the ones with the spikes. And you're set in. And even on smooth ice, which the spring kind will make you just slide around like you're on ice skates, but with the crampons, you really don't go anywhere.
Put some teeth on your feet. Thank you, Paula. And I'm glad that you're back out there walking your dog with confidence. So, Paula, great example. Some good advice. Lots of dog walkers out there getting fresh air, getting exercise, but now doing it with less fear. And what advice do you have about, like, just putting the footwear, Matt?
Footwear is huge, and Dr. Boyd mentioned that earlier as well.
Yeah.
And so from everything from your boots, but even those little extra that you can clip onto the bottoms of your feet really do make a huge difference in terms of the traction, just actual safety in terms of how much traction you have. But then, like you said, that taking away that fear aspect actually lets you get out and walk on those more challenging days. And again, do it safely. That's a big thing with activity is always we want to make sure that you're safe and comfortable doing it.
And Dr. Boyd, do you recommend the spikes that you can add on to whatever footwear you have to make it easier for you to stay on your feet?
Yeah, certainly that is some footwear that you can add. Also, I mean, I know that they have also those, you know, like the little rubber boots that people put on, like the shoe covers. Mm-hmm. Some of those come in a more tactile, you know, with little spike things. I know some of the trainers use those in the NHL for going out onto the ice. So, yeah, anything that will give you better ice traction and shoe wear is good to do. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's like, you know, you might leave home in you know, those really nice shoes that look great with your suit or your dress, but you might want to put those in a pouch and wear something else until you get there, because they often have very slick bottoms. And also, too, the other place where we see slips and falls, which is interesting, is it's not just outside on the ice. It's once you walk into a place or into a building and there's a little bit of wetness on the floor, we see a lot of people who slip and fall actually making that transition from going outside to inside.
And Dr. Ward, she mentioned that she has osteoporosis, and so she's worried about, you know, falling and maybe having to have a hip replacement. And what do we know about just the recovery from a hip replacement or a knee replacement?
Yeah, so, I mean, once you have a hip fracture, I mean, it's a significant injury. I mean, if you take all patients who sustain a fall and a hip fracture, and if you add osteoporosis to that, I mean, their mortality rate goes up significantly, meaning, you know, more people die just because they become bedridden or they can't get up and walk. And, you know, in the face of that, doing some kind of hip procedure, whether it's fixing the fracture, even if you fix the fracture, their levels are still higher than the normal population in terms of mortality. But if you fix the fracture or do a total hip or any of those things, that's helpful to try to get them up and get them moving again. But their fatality rate is still higher than for someone who doesn't sustain that injury. So it's a significant problem, especially with hip fractures, we don't see knee fractures as much. I mean, most of the time when people fall, you see patella or kneecap types of fractures. But the big bones are rarely around the knee joint anyway, rarely get affected. Sometimes you might see a tibia fracture or something near the joint. But patella fractures are pretty common, and that can set you back for a while because that's what helps to, you know, move your lower leg in terms of extending and walking.
And Matt, you're telling me, let's talk, Angela, more about prevention, more advice. I'm like, let's avoid this bad situation. And so what do you want us to know about, first of all, about being sedentary? Like, some of us will look out the window and like, I'm not going out there. But then what?
Yeah, that's a big issue, especially in the winter. I mean, a lot of us who watch our daily step counts, watch them track down in the winter when we look outside and say, no, thank you. In terms of preventing falls, I mean, good strength beforehand can help you catch yourself a little bit easier. Being stronger is going to help you with your balance typically, and better core strength in particular will help with balance. There are different ways to get those step counts up. Minnesota, we have great malls, so mall walking is a great option. My grandma, bless her heart, used to walk, get her 8,000 steps in her little apartment, wore her carpet out around her coffee table. I don't think that's for me. I don't think that's for most people. But if you're determined, you can still keep that activity level up, and that does make a big difference. So that hopefully you don't fall. And then if you did happen to fall, you're more likely to be okay, especially with weight-bearing exercise. You're less likely to have those fractures that we were just talking about and things like that. So that prevention goes hand in hand with some of that strength training ahead of time as well.
Because being active is good. And this Absolutely. Makes me think of a woman I sat next to during one of my physical therapy sessions. She had broken her arm or broken her wrist playing pickleball. And then I remember the Star Tribune wrote a whole story about an increase in injuries from people playing pickleball. Have you seen that, Matt?
Absolutely. We're seeing a ton of increased just attention and participation with pickleball. And with that, certainly goes some injuries as well.
What are they doing? Like stepping backwards? Or why are they falling?
So we get some different kind of typical sports injuries with muscle strains and different things like that. But yeah, absolutely. You're reaching for a ball. The pickleballs don't bounce like tennis balls. And so if you're crossing over from a different racket sport, you're maybe reaching a little bit further than you expected. And so it's actually pretty easy to kind of get off balance and go down. Pickleball is a great activity, though, in that you can do it in a lot of gyms. There are a lot of indoor pickleball places popping up for winter activities as well. But with that, there obviously does carry some injury risk, as with any activity.
And Dr. Boyd, are you familiar with this uptick in injuries from folks playing pickleball?
Well, not only uptick in injuries, but just uptick in the number of people playing. I think when you look at how it's taken off, actually, in this country, period, especially in Minnesota, with the number of people who are playing, it's probably inevitable that the number of injuries were also going to increase as well. And especially with the demographic where it's popular, which is, you know, people who are a little bit older, but a doable sport, and they all love it. So I think it's a combination of things. I think that there's more exposures by more people in a sport that's growing really fast. And we're seeing the concomitant increase in injuries to go with it.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about winter injuries and what we need to do to protect ourselves and what the recovery can look like. Let's take a phone call from Superior, Wisconsin. We have John on the line. Hi, John. And what's going on there in Superior?
Oh, it's a lot of snow.
A lot of snow.
And that's what happened to me. I was out with my snowblower, and I live alone. It was dark, and I fell. I couldn't get up, and I was like 80 feet from my house. So I had to crawl to my front porch where I could pull myself back standing with my arms. I don't have very much strength in my legs. Mm-hmm. So I was just going to comment that if I hadn't been able to do that, I would have froze to death outside because it was 10 below.
And so you're using your snowblower. I'm guessing there's a heavy, wet snow?
No, it was actually fluffy snow. This was a couple years ago, but there was ice under the snow, and that made it really, I didn't know that, and it was the fluffy snow made it even slipperier because of the ice underneath, and I could not get up. I tried using the snowblower to pull myself up, and the snowblower kept tipping in when I was trying to use it as leverage, but so I had to crawl, you know, and if I hadn't, I'd have froze there right on the sidewalk.
Well, I'm so grateful that you survived that, that you were able to get back into your home, John. And thank you for sharing that and reminding us. Be careful, like with the snow blowing out there and the deep snow and ice underneath the snow you don't see. And again, shoveling as well. Matt, what do you hear there in his story?
Yeah, and that brings up a really good point that thankfully that you were able to get back and pull yourself up. But one more thing that we can do to protect ourselves in those situations is have a way to call for help. So have your either cell phone on hand, or Apple Watches now have kind of call capabilities sometimes, or different devices do that. But same thing when you go out on walks and maybe are away from home, to have some way to contact you know, a friend, loved one, neighbor, something like that, to be able to come get you should something unfortunate happen.
Dr. Boyd, anything you want to share with us about using the snow blowers or shoveling to be aware of?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's essentially heavy equipment, and it's tough. I mean, obviously, we've heard about the really big ones, like Jeremy Reiner and his incident, but then also we see a number of people who use snow blowers in their driveways and the like, and you know, for whatever reason, will stick their hand in there to try and clear it if it feels like it's stuck, which is always a bad idea. We've seen, you know, snow blowers also, you know, catch on to long coats, things like that, and pull people's extremities in. So, I mean, these are mechanical, you know, things that you have to be in control of. In other words, they have to be off or, you know, stopped or have some kind of a safety switch where if you're not in the right position, that they're not running. And you just have to be aware. I mean, you have to understand that, you're working with a tool that can hurt you.
And what about the shovel? Just from personal experience, shoveling snow, there's a right and a wrong way to do it. Any advice you'd share about, like, how do you position your body or how to shovel and not shovel, Dr. Boyd?
I think, you know, the biggest thing about shoveling is it's right. I mean, the wet, heavy snow is really difficult. And it's not only we're talking about, you know, soft tissue types of injuries. Typically, when you're talking about shoveling things, sometimes you can get all the way to where you might have a disc type of herniation, something like that in your back. I would, you know, mostly say, you know, it's just like everything else. I mean, you have to bend at your knees, you know, try to keep your back relatively, you know, it's not going to be all the way straight, but, you know, no more than 45, you don't want to bend over and try to lift the snow that way, because it really puts a fair amount of stress on your low back. But that would be, yeah, I would say those would be the keys for me. With regard to shoveling,
those low back injuries, I mean, that's no joke. That, you know, that chronic pain from that. Matt, anything else about shoveling we should know?
Yeah, like Dr. Boyd said, I mean, the more we can use the bigger muscle groups in our body, you know, the legs to do that heavy lifting, the better that is. Back pain is really complicated. Pain in general is really complicated. And so it goes well beyond just a tissue injury that way. And so it can linger long after the tissue repairs itself. And so you mentioned chronic back pain. That's one of the big things that we see. That tissue heals, but that pain signal still persists. And so if we can stop that before it even starts, you know, that works out better. So again, using those bigger muscle groups, trying to do more pushing of the snow rather than lifting. It's good.
I want to read a couple of Twitter comments. We were talking about recommendations of how to prevent falls. A lot of people have been recommending a brand of boots called Ice Bugs. My best purchase, this is someone writes to me, Brickle Laureate. My best purchase, Angela, was Ice Bug boots. They have nibs on the bottom, and I have not slipped once while wearing them outdoors. doors or indoors. And that, I think about this because Minnesota Supreme Court Justice, retired Justice Alan Page, who was here yesterday, said the same thing to me. He's like, Angela, get some ice bug boots. So that's out there if you're looking for a type of brand. A lot of folks seem to like that. And another person writes, she writes, I was came across an elderly neighbor. This is from Nancy. Came across an elderly neighbor who was out walking, who had fallen. Visually, nothing appeared broken, and she verbally said nothing was hurt. Got her home, but her muscles froze up. Her husband took her to hospital and discovered a small pelvis fracture. When do you call 911 with a fall? Dr. Boyd, how do you know when to walk it off and when to go to the hospital or to urgent care or ER? Yeah.
That can be difficult. I know we had discussed it earlier in terms of, you know, when you come across someone who's fallen, you know, number one, obviously you want to see if they had any kind of a head injury. Mm-hmm. And then obviously if they're non-responsive, you know, you're going to call 911. If, you know, the person's responsive and talking to you and they feel like, okay, yeah, this isn't, you know, I can't get up because, you know, my leg or whatever, then you also might be in a position where you call 911 at that point because they're not able to get up and mobilize. And then as patients start to feel like, okay, maybe I can get up, and sometimes they may make an attempt to get up but then have pain, and then they have to sit right back down. You know, again, you're not going to be able to move them very far, so another situation where you might call 911. And lastly, yes, a patient might get up and they might move around, but then still have some soreness. And it gets back to, like we were talking about, I'm not sure, I can't say what kind of fracture she had, but it may have been one of those like non-displaced, or, you know, there's a fracture line, but things are still really lined up. And so she was able to mobilize enough to get home, but then the pain kind of persisted. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, started to slowly increase. And that's what prompted them to go. So it's an interesting thing when you get a fracture, you know, the muscles around the fracture kind of shut down. It's your body's protection mechanism for having a fracture. So oftentimes when patients can't move an extremity or some, you know, their arm doesn't work, you know, you have to be suspicious that there's a fracture there because that's how it protects itself.
So it may not be immediately obvious that it's serious.
Correct. Mm. Correct.
All right. And Matt, we just have 30 seconds left here. I'm sorry, Dr. Boyd. Matt, anything you want to say in our last seconds here?
Yeah, I would just add to that in terms of if there's visual deformity or significant swelling, you know, those are red flags that you should definitely go get checked out. Again, head trauma would fit into that as well. And then more the longer term, if there's a loss of function, you know, mm-hmm. that's definitely something you should check out with your, you know, medical provider, whether that's orthopedic urgent care or ultimately with a rehab professional.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I feel like I've learned so much. Thank you to all of our callers who shared your stories, and to our two guests who shared so much great information. We've been talking with Dr. Joel Boyd, and surgeon at Tria Orthopedics, also the head team physician for the Minnesota Wild and team physician at the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers football team, as well as Matt Neuger, a visiting assistant professor of kinesiology at St. Olaf College and a practicing physical therapist. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Dr. Boyd. This conversation was produced by Matt Alvarez. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.